So this is interesting. We finished the 12th chapter last time, which was the divine work. It seems that Sri Aurobindo, somewhere in the 1940s, conceived of another couple of chapters that he wanted to append to this first section of the synthesis of yoga. He called this first section, when he began this process of revision, the Yoga of Divine Works, and he intended a 13th chapter, maybe a 14th, to be added. The 13th he titled The Supermind and the Yoga of Works, and we'll look at it tonight. Again, when this was serialized in the Advent, 1946-1948, this chapter did not appear, and it did not appear when it was published as a book in 1948 under the title The Synthesis of Yoga, describing that it was the first section of a larger work that had appeared in the Arya. This chapter did not appear until afterwards, after Sri Aurobindo left his body. Then it was discovered among his writings and appeared in the 1955 version of the SAIUC, the International University Center version. And from then on, it's been published and available to us. It's just a brief introduction to the subject. Obviously, he meant to write much more, set it aside, never got back to it. So if we think of the context, of course, he was beginning in the late 30s to back away from that endless correspondence. He wanted to place himself more and more in the actual process of yoga in bringing down the supramental consciousness to the earth, and was using savitri as a means of ascension into that superior range of consciousness. Well, the broken leg in late 1938, on the eve of the 24th of November, resulted in a revision of the Life Divine and an expansion of the Life Divine. And we've had that before us for all these years, and we've gone through that and read that together. So after the theory of the Life Divine, he turns back to the practice of yoga. And so this is an unfinished appendage to the rest of what he's written in the Yoga of Divine Works, which is to harness us to the practical life, to bring into the sinews of the body what it means to have a consciousness integrated with the divine, and to consecrate that, to give that, to rejoice and exult in what that means to the embodied life. So let's read through this tonight. Chapter 13, The Supermind and the Yoga of Works. An integral yoga includes, as a vital and indispensable element in its total and ultimate aim, the conversion of the whole being into a higher spiritual consciousness and a larger divine existence. Our parts of will and action, our parts of knowledge, our thinking being, our emotional being, our being of life, all our self and nature must seek the divine, enter into the infinite, unite with the eternal. That is already a colossal work, is it not? Every aspect of us, not simply the essence of our soul nature, but all of the instruments of nature too, must come into the picture. And to become part of the infinite means that the finite must become aware of it without being absolved into it. To unite with the eternal means to be consciously one with what is timeless, while remaining in time. This is a seamless existence which brings us back to this peace chant that we begin with, Purnam Madha Purnam Idam. That is full, this is full. Sri Aurobindo is looking for the full marriage of spirit into matter. But man's present nature is limited, divided, unequal. It is easiest for him to concentrate in the strongest part of his being and follow a definite line of progress proper to his nature. Only rare individuals have the strength to take a large immediate plunge straight into the sea of the divine infinity. So few are truly prepared for the integral, complete experience from the outset. They have to move a step at a time, which is why yoga is an advance, an evolution, a progress. Some, therefore, must choose as a starting point a concentration in thought or contemplation or the mind's one-pointedness to find the eternal reality of the self in them. Others can more easily withdraw into the heart to meet there the divine, the eternal. Yet others are predominantly dynamic and active. For these, it is best to center themselves in the will and enlarge their being through works. This is the yoga of divine works, after all. United with the self and source of all by their surrender of their will into its infinity, guided in their works by the secret divinity within, or surrendered to the Lord of the cosmic action as the master and mover of all their energies of thought, feeling, act, becoming by this enlargement of being selfless and universal, they can reach by works some first fullness of a spiritual status. But the path, whatever its point of starting, must debouch into a vaster dominion. It must proceed in the end through a totality of integrated knowledge, emotion, will of dynamic action, perfection of the being and the entire nature. The word debouche from the French means from the mouth, literally, so to flow from. If we're talking about the perfection of the being and the entire nature, this is the siddhi that Sri Aurobindo aims at, the fulfillment, the perfection. In the supramental consciousness, on the level of the supramental existence, this integration becomes consummate. There, knowledge, will, emotion, the perfection of the self and the dynamic nature rise each to its absolute of itself and all to their perfect harmony and fusion with each other, to a divine integrality, a divine perfection. For the supermind is a truth consciousness in which the divine reality, fully manifested, no longer works with the instrumentation of the ignorance. A truth of status of being, which is absolute, becomes dynamic in a truth of energy and activity of the being, which is self-existent and perfect. So note that he does not redefine for us here what is the supermind. In the Life Divine, he has defined this as the infinite unknowable reality which posits itself as Satchit-Ananda, a conscious existent whose nature is delight, and then, regarding itself, brings into colossal and harmonic manifestation, all the rich infinities which exist within it. The many come out of this one being. So here, Sri Aurobindo is calling us to look at this not from above as it is in its own nature, but to see it in reverse. This is seen from below. It's a truth of status of being which is absolute, becomes dynamic in a truth of energy and activity of the being, self-existent and perfect. Every movement there is a movement of the self-aware truth of being, and every part is in entire harmony with the whole. Even the most limited and finite action is in the truth consciousness, a movement of the eternal and infinite, and partakes of the inherent absoluteness and perfection of the eternal and infinite. So every dot, every pointillage, every speck of being in the supramental consciousness is utterly, essentially united with all and represents perfectly the infinity, the cosmicity of all, while maintaining its own absolute individuality as an expression of this absolute. It seems to move in time, always is eternal. It seems small, partitioned from the rest. Always it is one with the whole. So what he speaks of here is the union in the supramental, in the truth consciousness, as he says, of the apparent opposites of being. And there they stand in natural and unstudied organic unity. An ascent, he continues, into the supramental truth not only raises our spiritual and essential consciousness to that height, but brings about a descent of this light and truth into all our being and all our parts of nature. All then becomes part of the divine truth, an element and means of the supreme union and oneness. This ascent and descent must be, therefore, an ultimate aim of this yoga. So for Sri Aurobindo, there is no question of the idea of rising beyond the golden lid that separates the mind from the immensity of that supramental awareness. But once penetrating, pushing past that lid, to live in that radiance is not sufficient. One must return with that radiance here. And it is the ascent coupled with the descent, which is the aim of his yoga, this integral yoga. And it is the ascent and the descent together that affect the real union, the ultimate aim of yoga. What is yoga? Yoga means the yoking together, the union. In the beginning, when we're starting the practice, we're trying to yoke together the various elements of the nature to all go along on this integral path. But as we rise into oneness with that, then it is the yoking of the divine nature back to the lower nature. So if there is no return, what was the ascent for? If there is no consummation in matter, why did we manifest matter? To fulfill the cosmic journey, the descent is necessary, and the yoga is unfulfilled until the descent occurs. So while it is an enormous work simply to rise into the eternal and to live in the consciousness of this radiant sun, we have to come back with it here as well. A union with the divine reality of our being and all being is the one essential object of the yoga. So union, but everywhere, there and here, here and there. This is a sentence you want to underline. This is a consummate phrase that we ought to make stand out to us. It is necessary to keep this in mind. We must remember that our yoga is not undertaken for the sake of the acquisition of supermind itself, but for the sake of the divine. We seek the supermind not for its own joy and greatness, but to make the union absolute and complete, to feel it, possess it, dynamize it in every possible way of our being, in its highest intensities and largest widenesses, and in every range and turn and nook and recess of our nature. It is a mistake to think, as many are apt to think, that the object of a supramental yoga is to arrive at a mighty magnificence of supermanhood, a divine power and greatness, the self-fulfillment of a magnified individual personality, a la Nietzsche. This is a false and disastrous conception. Disastrous because it is likely to raise the pride, vanity, and ambition of the rajasic vital mind in us, and that, if not overpassed and overcome, must lead to spiritual downfall. False, because it is an egoistic conception, and the first condition of the supramental change is to get rid of ego. It is most dangerous for the active and dynamic nature of the man of will and works, which can easily be led away by the pursuit of power. Power comes inevitably by the supramental change. It is a necessary condition for a perfect action, but it is the divine Shakti that comes and takes up the nature and the life, the power of the One acting through the spiritual individual. It is not an aggrandizement of the personal force, not the last crowning fulfillment of the separative mental and vital ego. Self-fulfillment is a result of the yoga, but its aim is not the greatness of the individual. The sole aim is a spiritual perfection, a finding of the true self, and a union with the divine by putting on the divine consciousness and nature. Sadharmya Mukti. Liberation into the same law of being. So this is that absolute sense of oneness, the congruence of the individual with the cosmic in the transcendent, here and now, but always seated in eternity, never forgetting in the passage of time that one floats on that, in that, is surrounded by that. All the rest is constituent detail and attendant circumstance, egocentric impulses, ambition, desire of power and greatness, motives of self-assertion are foreign to this greater consciousness and would be an insuperable bar against any possibility of even a distant approach towards the supramental change. One must lose one's little lower self to find the greater self. Union with the divine must be the master motive. Even the discovery of the truth of one's own being and of all being, life in that truth and its greater consciousness, perfection of the nature, are only the natural results of that movement. Indispensable conditions of its entire consummation, they are part of the central aim only because they are a necessary development and a major consequence. So many in the life of the ashram, and remember Sri Aurobindo is by now writing from fully 2 decades of ashram life. So many have fallen victim to thinking that, why are we taking so much time to do this? Let me break free. I'll race forward and capture the supermind, since Mother and Sri Aurobindo seem reluctant. I will get it. I will bring it back. I will establish the great order of truth on the world. I. And each person that attempted that failed and crashed and often left the yoga entirely. It must also be kept in mind that the supramental change is difficult, distant, an ultimate stage. It must be regarded as the end of a far-off vista. It cannot be and must not be turned into a first aim, a constantly envisaged goal, or an immediate objective. For it can only come into the view of possibility after much arduous self-conquest and self-exceeding, at the end of many long and trying stages of a difficult self-evolution of the nature. Remember, Sri Aurobindo describes yoga as compressed evolution, an evolution pulled into the compass of a one life, of a single term of human existence, is what we would call yoga. One must first acquire an inner yogic consciousness and replace by it our ordinary view of things, natural movements, motives of life. One must revolutionize the whole present build of our being. So in other words, he's saying that we must establish an inwardness. This is the interning of the consciousness, more towards the subliminal. He's not asking you yet to realize the psychic. That's in the next sentence. Next, we have to go still deeper, discover our veiled psychic entity, and in its light and under its government, psychicize our inner and outer parts, turn mind nature, life nature, body nature, and all our mental, vital, physical action and states and movements into a conscious instrumentation of the soul. So first we have to become aware of our inner terrain, then penetrate and find the psyche, live from that, get seated in that, and then breathe its power into mind, life, and body, and make them receptive and reflective of soul value. He continues, afterwards, or concurrently, we have to spiritualize the being in its entirety by a descent of a divine light, force, purity, knowledge, freedom, and wideness. It is necessary to break down the limits of the personal mind, life, and physicality, dissolve the ego, enter into the cosmic consciousness, realize the self, acquire a spiritualized and universalized mind and heart, life force, physical consciousness. So we have to establish in ourselves the wideness, the purity of the Atman consciousness, but also realize that this Atman is not merely passive and static. It is also dynamic, and Atma Shakti has created the cosmos and dwells in that. And so both active and dynamic, as well as essential and static, poises of being must become part of our larger, now spiritual nature. So now we have discovered the subliminal, lived in the soul consciousness, widened into the spiritual. Then, after perfecting the individual, turning to the cosmic and transcendent, we're ready for something more. Then only the passage into supramental consciousness begins to become possible. And even then, there is a difficult ascent to make, each stage of which is a separate arduous achievement. Yoga is a rapid and concentrated conscious evolution of the being, but however rapid, even though it may affect in a single life what, in an unassisted nature, might take centuries and millenniums or many hundreds of lives, still, all evolution must move by stages. Even the greatest rapidity and concentration of the movement cannot swallow up all the stages or reverse natural process and bring the end near to the beginning. A hasty and ignorant mind, a too eager force, easily forget this necessity. They rush forward to make the supermind an immediate aim and expect to pull it down with a pitchfork from its highest heights in the infinite. As you know from reading his letters on yoga, he is frequently trying to stop the strain, the stress that the sadhak feels that I must reach up and somehow grab hold of the supermind and drag it down forcefully into the lower nature. And even now, of course, absent the leadership of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, many think that they can advance to these heights, into these domains, and not only advise, but lead others to achieve the same. This is not only an absurd expectation, but full of danger. For the vital desire may very well bring in an action of dark or vehement vital powers, which hold out before it a promise of immediate fulfillment of its impossible longing. The consequence is likely to be a plunge into many kinds of self-deception, a yielding to the falsehoods and temptations of the forces of darkness, a hunt for supernormal powers, a turning away from the divine to the asuric nature, a fatal self-inflation into an unnatural, unhuman, and undivine bigness of magnified ego. But hidden in this, this search for powers, you know, for siddhis, the ordinary siddhis which are spoken about in Nath Yoga, etc., the search for powers to shorten the evolution, you know, betray a kind of impatience with the process. And when the spirit has been realized, that kind of impatience is not possible if it's been established in the being and there is a kind of equality of nature, a vast peace, then this press, this haste, this hot passion to go forward prematurely doesn't press so much. So, again, if the being is small, the nature weak and incapable, there is not this large-scale disaster. But a loss of balance, a mental unhinging, and fall into unreason, or a vital unhinging and consequent moral aberration, or a deviation into some kind of morbid abnormality of the nature, may be the untoward consequence. We need not name names. This is not a yoga in which abnormality of any kind, even if it be an exalted abnormality, can be admitted as a way to self-fulfillment or spiritual realization. Indeed, it demands integration and balance. Even when one enters into supernormal and suprarational experience, there should be no disturbance of the poise which must be kept firm from the summit of the consciousness to its base. Samatha is one of the real signs of the establishment of the supramental light. The experiencing consciousness must preserve a calm balance, an unfailing clarity and order in its observation, a sort of sublimated common sense, an unfailing power of self-criticism, right discrimination, viveka, coordination and firm vision of things, a sane grasp on facts, and a high spiritualized positivism must always be there. It is not by becoming irrational or infrarational that one can go beyond ordinary nature into supernature. It should be done by passing through reason to a greater light of super reason. This super reason descends into reason and takes it up into higher levels, even while breaking its limitations. Reason is not lost, but changes and becomes its own true unlimited self, a coordinating power of the supernature. So you see, even here, the ascent and the descent are necessary for the consequent, the desirable integration of being. Another error that has to be guarded against is also one to which our mentality is easily prone. It is to take some higher intermediate consciousness, or even any kind of supernormal consciousness for the supermind. To reach supermind, it is not enough to go above the ordinary movements of the human mind. It is not enough to receive a greater light, a greater power, a greater joy, or to develop capacities of knowledge, sight, effective will that surpass the normal range of the human being. All light is not the light of the spirit. Still less is all light the light of the supermind. The mind, the vital, the physical itself have lights of their own, as yet hidden, which can be very inspiring, exalting, informative, powerfully executive. A breaking out into the cosmic consciousness may also bring in an immense enlargement of the consciousness and power, an opening into the inner mind, inner vital, inner physical, any range of the subliminal consciousness, can liberate an activity of abnormal or supernormal powers of knowledge, action, or experience, which the uninstructed mind can easily mistake for spiritual revelations, inspirations, intuitions. An opening upward into the greater ranges of the higher mental being can bring down much light and force, creating an intense activity of the intuitivized mind and life power, or an ascent into these ranges can bring a true but still incomplete light, easily exposed to mixture, a light which is spiritual in its source, though it does not always remain spiritual in its active character when it comes down into the lower nature. So we see always when we're working within the belt of this triple universe, matter, life, and mind, that any luminosity that comes from a plane not supramental will suffer deviation, will suffer limitation, will not achieve its stated aim, cannot, by the nature of where it comes from. It cannot have the power to change and transform its matrix. Body, life, and mind, the adhara. Instead, what happens is these powers, wherever they come from, even from some levels which might be considered to be super-rational, certainly from inside the subliminal nature, they get muddied in their descent, in their merger into the physical consciousness. He continues, but none of these things is the supramental light, the supramental power. That can only be seen and grasped when we have reached the summits of mental being, entered into overmind, and stand on the borders of an upper, a greater hemisphere of spiritual existence. And here he's writing, reflecting back on these pages, which were originally written in the rest of the aria, back from 1914 to early 1920, when he could, from his current vantage, see the errors even of the luminosities which he believed were leading him to the supermind then. There, the ignorance, the inconscience, the original blank nescience, slowly awaking towards a half-knowledge, which are the basis of material nature, and which surround, penetrate, and powerfully limit all our powers of mind and life, cease altogether. For an unmixed and unmodified truth consciousness is there, the substance of all the being, its pure spiritual texture. So until you can at least attain to the overmind, this delegated consciousness which supermind pours downwards to reach into the triplicity of mind, life, and matter, which overarches all of that. From that overmental status, if you peer upwards, you can see that beyond that golden lid is the range of the supermental consciousness. That is what one must get into. But even the overmental has not the power to transform. To imagine that we have reached such a condition when we are still moving in the dynamics of the ignorance, though it may be an enlightened or illumined ignorance, is to lay ourselves open either to a disastrous misleading or to an arrest of the evolution of the being. It just stops. For if it is some inferior state that we thus mistake for the supermind, it lays us open to all the dangers we have seen to attend a presumptuous, egoistic haste in our demand for achievement. If it is one of the higher states that we presume to be the highest, we may, though we achieve much, yet fall short of the greater, more perfect goal of our being. For we shall remain content with an approximation, and the supreme transformation will escape us. So Sri Aurobindo is examining himself. These are notes written to himself, a description of his then state, where he had achieved this range between the overmind and the supermind, and was not willing to precipitate a false manifestation, was not willing to assume prematurely that something had been achieved that had not. He had paused, he was waiting, he was preparing, his eyes were wide open, he was calm, he was patient, he was capacious, waiting for the descent. Even the achievement of a complete inner liberation and a high spiritual consciousness is not that supreme transformation. For we may have that achievement, a status perfect in itself, in essence, and still our dynamic parts may in their instrumentation belong to an enlightened, spiritualized mind, and may be in consequence, like all mind, defective even in its greater power and knowledge, still subject to a partial or local obscuration or a limitation by the original circumscribing nescience. Sri Aurobindo advised those who followed him to be able to give themselves a straight look, to see what was actual, what was potential, to be surrendered, but to be aware, and never to give up common sense, to be practical, to be pragmatic in the practice of yoga. Sri Aurobindo was poised for the next ascent. As he wrote this, you can see that he wrote just a few pages, set it aside, left it unfinished, and did not include it in the synthesis of yoga. He didn't have anything definitive to say, so he left it suspended. We, of course, have found it, and as with all writings of Sri Aurobindo, find it invaluable. But his words are candid, and we need to observe them. He confides us to be careful, to be sincere, to be entire in our self-giving, to be fully consecrated, to live an actual oneness with the divine in all the parts of our being, and then through that self-offering to rise and then to descend again. We're still working on this. So next week, having completed tonight our reading of the first part of the synthesis of yoga, the Yoga of Divine Works, we will move into the second part, the Yoga of Integral Knowledge, because if we are the Integral Knowledge Study Center, we ought to be able to read together the Yoga of Integral Knowledge, isn't it? So, a passage from Savitri. We continue where we were last time. This is in Book 11, the Book of Everlasting Day. The Soul's Choice and the Supreme Consummation. And we'll pick it up on page 703, just where we left off last time. O Savitri, thou art my spirit's power, the revealing voice of my immortal word, the face of truth upon the roads of time, pointing to the souls of men, the roots to God. While the dim light from the veiled spirit's peak falls upon matter's stark inconscient sleep, as if a pale moonbeam on a dense glade, and mind in a half-light moves amid half-truths, and the human heart knows only human love, and life is a stumbling and imperfect force, and the body counts out its precarious days. You shall be born into man's dubious hours, in forms that hide the soul's divinity, and show through veils of the earth's doubting air my glory breaking as through clouds a sun, or burning like a rare and inward fire, and with my nameless influence fill men's lives. Yet shall they look up as to peaks of God, and feel God like a circumambient air, and rest on God as on a motionless base. Yet shall there glow on mind, like a horned moon, the spirit's crescent splendor in pale skies, and light man's life upon his Godward road. But more there is concealed in God's beyond that shall one day reveal its hidden face. Now, mind is all and its uncertain ray. Mind is the leader of the body and life. Mind, the thought-driven chariot of the soul, carrying the luminous wanderer in the night to vistas of a far uncertain dawn, to the end of the spirit's fathomless desire, to its dream of absolute truth and utter bliss. There are greater destinies mind cannot surmise. Fixed on the summit of the evolving path, the traveler now treads in the ignorance, unaware of his next step, not knowing his goal. Mind is not all his tireless climb can reach. There is a fire on the apex of the worlds. There is a house of the eternal's light. There is an infinite truth, an absolute power. The spirit's mightiness shall cast off its mask. Its greatness shall be felt, shaping the world's course. It shall be seen in its own veilless beams, a star rising from the inconscient's night, a sun climbing to supernature's peak. Abandoning the dubious middle way, a few shall glimpse the miraculous origin, and some shall feel in you the secret force, and they shall turn to meet a nameless tread, adventurers into a mightier day. Ascending out of the limiting breadths of mind, they shall discover the world's huge design and step into the truth, the right, the vast. You shall reveal to them the hidden eternities, the breath of infinitudes not yet revealed, some rapture of the bliss that made the world, some rush of the force of God's omnipotence, some beam of the omniscient mystery. But when the hour of the divine draws near, the mighty mother shall take birth in time, and God be born into the human clay, in forms made ready by your human lives. Then shall the truth supreme be given to men. There is a being beyond the being of mind, an immeasurable cast into many forms, a miracle of the multitudinous one. There is a consciousness mind cannot touch, its speech cannot utter, nor its thought reveal. It has no home on earth, no center in man, yet is the source of all things thought and done, the fount of the creation and its works. It is the origin of all truth here, the sun orb of mind's fragmentary rays, infinity's heaven that spills the reign of God, the immense that calls to man to expand the spirit, the wide aim that justifies his narrow attempts, a channel for the little he tastes of bliss. Some shall be made the glory's receptacles and vehicles of the eternal's luminous power. These are the high forerunners, the heads of time, the great deliverers of earthbound mind, the high transfigurers of human clay, the firstborn of a new supernal race. The incarnate dual power shall open God's door. Eternal supermind, touch earthly time. The Superman shall wake in mortal man and manifest the hidden demigod or grow into the godlight and God force, revealing the secret deity in the cave. Then shall the earth be touched by the Supreme. His bright unveiled transcendence shall illumine the mind and heart and force the life and act to interpret his inexpressible mystery in a heavenly alphabet of divinity's signs. Namaste, Jai Ma.